next time you need auto parts and accessories, trust the parts professionals at the 108 Seattle O'Reilly Auto Parts stores. Our professional parts people know what it takes to get the job done right. Professionals have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for decades. Now you can too. Professional parts people. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Welcome to Cloud Talk Radio, where listeners hear from business leaders about relevant topics, from marketing to cash flow management. Tune in every week with hosts Robert J. Chandler and Keith Enix, and stay engaged with a growing audience of like-minded entrepreneurs. Learn critical business skills and get answers to questions that help you manage better businesses. Cloud Talk Radio, your business resource in the internet age.
Well, welcome back to today's show. This is Keith Enix, and you're listening to Cloud Talk Radio. We're getting loud in the cloud today with Dan Bowser. He's the co-founder of Smart Business Money Habits. And we had the other co-founder on the show with us last week, George Wong. If you didn't listen to that episode, be sure to check that out. We covered some really good information on sort of just an overview, three primary points and some really big struggle points that you can have as a business owner, how to get through those struggle areas so that you can put more money into your pocket, more ROI for your business. Well, Dan, it's great to have you on the show today. George told us that you would have a different viewpoint on just coming at this whole topic, and there was just a lot more that I wanted to ask George last week that I'm sure our listeners had questions on as well. And so it's great to have you on the show. You've been in the industry for over 20 years helping businesses create an exit strategy for their business, and that's our topic today. We're going to be talking about creating an exit strategy, but we're going to start a little bit before that. Creating an exit strategy, from what I can tell here on your website, is more about starting off with the right base. So we're going to start on the talking about the right base, stage one. There's four stages we're going to cover with Dan, and he's just going to give us a general overview of how they help businesses create an exit strategy. So it's great to have you on the show today, Dan.
Keith, I'm really excited to be here. This should be really good.
Oh, good. Glad to have you on the show. Why don't you give the listeners just a little bit of your history and why you ended up helping businesses? What makes you passionate about that?
Let's see if I can do this briefly, Keith. I was in the corporate world, and it was driving me nuts. That's not where I belonged. I needed to be in an environment where I could make decisions and be rewarded or reap the negative rewards of failure. But I wanted to be compensated in many, many ways based on my results. I left the corporate world. I went into consulting, and I worked with business owners to increase profits and reduce tax bills. And that kept me going for a long time. And then a little over 20 years ago, a client asked me, a client I'd worked with and had helped them develop a significantly profitable business, and they'd asked me if I'd help them sell it. And I initially thought, well, I'll get someone that can do that for them and do a good job. But as I checked around, I could not find anyone that I thought really knew what they were doing in terms of selling this business. This was a valuable business. They asked me if I would consider doing it myself, and I did. In fact, I even thought I had the buyer in mind. I thought someone would be a good prospect, and that transaction came together. And I found out that I have the patience to bring these kinds of transactions together. I don't have patience in other areas of my life, but in this area, I seem to have it.
That's interesting. So you decided to take that step out of the corporate world, and there's so many people out there who have done corporate world that we interview here. I guess it's that entrepreneurial heart, right? But not satisfied, wanting to get to that next step. You mentioned rewards. And a lot of people out there are creating businesses, and they're wanting that extra reward. I think of, myself, my dad, my grandpa. There's been a line of entrepreneurs in our family, and they had this desire to create businesses. And in the back of their mind, there's this kind of like this constant gnawing, I think, in all of us. And it's that we're supposed to be figuring out our retirement. We're supposed to be figuring out what our exit strategy is. And, you know, my dad's going through this right now, and he's a perfect example. I'm in the throes of trying to figure it out for my dad. Maybe some of you listeners out there, you've been in business for a long time. You're trying to figure out your exit strategy. And what is it that business owners need to be thinking about? I guess on two notes, if people are just starting out, you know, what do they need to be thinking about? What about people who are kind of towards the end and they haven't created an exit strategy? So maybe first we ask, you know, well, those two types of people, but what is an exit strategy? What does that mean to you, Dan?
Keith, if you don't mind, I'm going to back up just a bit on that.
Please do.
You're mentioning your dad and that he's thinking about an exit strategy for his business. Just brought this flash to mind. The reason I'm doing what I do today to a significant extent is because my father was self-employed. He had a little supermarket in my hometown, and he had a vision of himself as the owner of the market, and he had no other vision. His identity was tied up as the owner of that store. I find that is true with older business owners. I don't find it quite so true with younger owners. But the key was that my dad hung on to that business, and he sold it when he was 79. Now, I will assure you that at 79, he didn't have the same energy and drive to put into that business that he had when he was 69 or 59.
That's incredible.
Well, the sad part of the story is because he no longer had that drive, he had a business that was less valuable than it used to be, and he sold it to, in essence, the only buyer that came around. That buyer put very little money down. My dad was to finance the business. That buyer never made a payment.
Wow.
He sold off everything in the store. He sold off all the equipment and then turned it back to my dad.
Wow.
And that was a terrible thing for him to go through, and it was very painful for me to watch. But I made a vow that if I had any ability to help the business owners that I was working with avoid that problem, I was going to do it. There's a couple of things that is a little bit different today, and different in a, well, I was going to say negative sense, but perhaps that's not true. Business is much more competitive today. You know, back in my dad's day, you could start a business or get into a business when you're in your 20s or 30s, and you could run it into your 70s or 80s if you wanted to, and make it work. You know, perhaps not really well, but you could make it work and you could make a living. It's pretty tough for a person to own a business for 15 or 20 or 30 years today because the stress is higher, the competition is tough, the margins are lower, and so the burnout is a factor that wasn't as prevalent in my dad's day as it is today. Today's business owners, and I'm talking about younger people, I'm talking about, in my experience, owners now in today's time are less than 60 years old.
Yeah.
They understand that it's actually okay to sell your business. It's actually okay to make a bundle of cash. And that it's actually okay to say, you know, I owned a store, I owned an online business, I owned a radio station or whatever the case might be, and I sold it. And it worked out really well. And then decide what they want to do next. So the idea of thinking about value and thinking about how you're going to create that value is really, really important if the owner is going to be paid, if the owner is going to be paid well, I should say. With a little luck, they earn a living from the business. With a little more luck, they earn a great living. But most business owners pass up the biggest paycheck of all, and that's to be cashed out for the value of their business.
Wow, that's fascinating. That story, I'm sure so many of the entrepreneurs out there who may be second generation or multiple generations after, we've seen that happen so many times, and your story is of your dad definitely, I think, hits home. So when you talk about an exit strategy, it's not necessarily when you retire. It's actually something that maybe happens a lot earlier than that is what you're kind of getting at, it sounds like.
That's exactly what I'm saying. if you started your business when you were in your 30s and you ran it for 10 years, which is a long time in today's world to build a business, and you sell it, you're now in your 40s. And you can take a little time off and you can get kind of antsy and you can start another business if that's what you want to do.
Right.
And
yeah.
And that leads me to the biggest problem that keeps owners from selling their business. And I don't think most people will understand it or appreciate it when I say it. But that is the question, or the answer to the question of, what am I going to do next?
Yeah.
I get up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, and I'm just thinking the blockers of, I don't know anything else.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that keeping you from actually doing something else. No, I totally following you, Dan. Keep on going.
I know these things because, Keith, you can't see me, but I have gray hair and I earned every one of them. and I earned some of them by working with business owners that didn't know what they were going to do next. And I will tell you that an owner who does not know where they're going, they don't know what the next step will be, cannot sell their business.
Yeah.
There will be something wrong with every offer that comes by the board. And sometimes that inability to sell isn't realized until the last minute. And that really does create a lot of problems for buyers or potential buyers who put a lot of time and energy into exploring it and to the owner himself. So what do you need to do first? You need to start thinking about what's next. What do I really want to do? I had one business owner. He had a very, very successful fire and water restoration business. And he left his business. We sold it, and he did very well on that transaction. And he moved to the Dominican Republic, he and his family, and for 5 years they did missionary work for their church.
Wow.
And when he came back, and I still hear from him from time to time, but when he came back, he told me how rewarding that was and that he never expected to be able to do that. And it was the cashing out value of his business that allowed it to happen.
Wow, that's incredible. That is incredible. You know, when I think about an exit strategy, there's this idea of, I think, also legacy. And I actually, when I was thinking about this topic, I was thinking more of, how do you create an exit strategy that causes you to generate passive income for your retirement so that you don't have to be involved in the business, but it's still generating revenue. But what you're talking about is an entirely different thing that I hadn't really, considered. Of course, there's this idea of selling your business that I've thought about, but not very seriously. And in your experience, I guess the question is, do you find that it's better, it's healthier for people to think about selling a couple businesses before they stick with, you know, maybe one business that they that then they pass down through their family or whatever?
You know, that's a tough question for me to answer because it it varies so much by individual. If the owner has involved family members in the business in a positive way, and let me explain what I mean by that. At dinner, the owner talks about the positive aspects of the business, the customers they took care of and the way they help people and the good employees they have. That's a positive discussion. If the owner comes home, sits down to dinner and is griping about how terrible the customers were today, he didn't get paid, the employees are in absolute pain, they just don't do what you want them to do, nobody wants to work today, I think you can envision those discussions. and then wonders why the kids don't want to get in the business later on.
Yeah.
Well, why would they? You've told them everything that's bad about it and nothing that's good.
Yeah. Good point.
but if you prepared your kids, then you can establish a legacy that pays you very well and does well by the kids. It can absolutely be done.
What about this concept of building, you know, this is for me, that's why I've got to ask this question. You know, what about this aspect of you develop, I've got a client actually who does this. That he owns a very successful service-based business, and he's done very well on one niche service. But he's sort of created this, if you want to call it a holding company, and he's adding on other services there that are unique businesses in and of themselves, but they sort of wholesale cross-sell into each other to create this sort of empire of service-based business. And to me, that just makes so much sense in my mind. What do you think about that sort of strategy?
Well, I think that can be an excellent strategy, and I've seen it work quite well. But what the owner does, whether that's the right way to go or not, depends upon the style and desires of the owner. Mm-hmm. There are very, very few. Bill Gates, for example, that can start a business from scratch, or Steve Jobs can start it in their garage from scratch and then grow through the business in all its iterations and continue to lead it and lead it well when it's a multi-million dollar business. Most of us just cannot do that.
Right.
Most of us, I think, can run a business well at one level. And for some business owners, that level is the startup. They really, really enjoy, and they're really, really good at getting a business off the ground. And once it's past startup and it actually starts to require some management skill and some delegation of duties and some hiring of employees, they get frustrated, they get tired, they really don't like that part of it. Well, that's an individual that might find real joy and financial success in taking a business through the startup into that stage where they no longer like to be involved and selling it and going back and doing the startup again.
Yeah.
There are other individuals whose style and makeup allows them to perhaps not do so well at the startup, but perhaps come in at that, be the buyer at that first or second level and build that holding company as you describe it. So it depends on the individual, and an individual who's good at startup should not, in my opinion, try to build the holding company. It probably won't work. And the holding company or the person who probably can handle that well probably isn't going to be so good at the startup and perhaps ought to think about buying a business rather than starting it from scratch.
I know you could probably dive into each one of these verticals very deeply,
which
is why, you know, we're going to encourage people to go to smartbusinessmoneyhabits.com and learn more. There's just a lot of information on your website that people can read. And maybe you might want to do some of these downloads on the website to dig a little deeper into what, you know, we're talking about today. Dan's got a lot of knowledge in this, so does George, and you know, if you want to take it to the next level with them, obviously, you know, getting in touch with them to learn more how you can better manage your business to that next level. But I wanted to talk to you about these different stages. You've got four stages you talk about. We've covered, I think, a little bit of generalness on methodology and stuff, but I want to dig just a little bit deeper on what is stage one. I mean, building your base, that's your stage one.
Well,
That's
that individual, Keith, who has proven that the business will probably work. They got past those initial startup days. They actually have customers coming in the door or scheduling appointments or patients, whatever the case might be. And so they're encouraged and they think they may really have something. And so now they've got to start putting the bases of a business in place. And when we talk about bases, we're talking essentially financial bases, financial tools, financial management tools, use financial statements wisely to manage the business, do some planning and goal setting, project sales, and then figure out what went right and what went wrong, and monitor expenses. And most importantly of all, learn to manage cash flow. Over the years that I've been in the consulting business, the number one problem by far, when an owner calls me and asks me if I would come and talk to them, the number one problem they have by far is a cash flow problem.
Yeah.
Now, they might not describe it that way. They might not know to describe it that way. They might say, you know, I don't have enough sales, or I'm having a collections problem, or I need to do better marketing, or on and on and on. But when I dig into it, I find that their problem is failure to manage their cash flow. And the business must learn how to handle those things if it's going to go on from that basic level. The basic level is a tough level if you don't get out of it.
Yeah.
Because it means you work hard every day and don't have a whole lot to show for it.
Yes, that's frustrating. Frustrating. We've all had those days where you know, you work really hard, you think you put in your 16-hour day and you know, you make a profit of a couple hundred bucks and then you know, you get a bill in the mail that is more than that. No fun.
Yes.
So managing your finances and your cash flow, that's great. Well, what about the step two, escape the entrepreneurial trap? What does that mean?
Well, that's stage one, that putting the base together is a trap if you never get out of it. And I mentioned that, and you and I chuckle about it, but there are so many businesses that are stuck there. That's the entrepreneurial trap. I'm in business for myself. Why did you get into business for yourself? Because I wanted to be my own boss and I wanted to call the shots. And in fact, they're not calling the shots. They have to be there every day, and they have to be there early, and they have to be there late, and they have to work very hard, and then they have to work even harder, and then they have to work even harder. And the day comes when they can't work any harder. So what do you do? You must escape that trap if you're going to maintain your sanity and your family relations and make a little bit of money. And that's what happens when you decide to break out of the entrepreneurial trap. And again, what you're doing, because again, we approach this from the financial point of view, what you're doing is you're improving the financial tools that you have and that you use to operate your business. For example, in that basic level, we suggest and we have tools to help an owner do some basic projection of sales and then compare actual sales against that, to do some basic planning and checking of spending and some basic projections of cash flow to anticipate when there might be a problem. And so that it can be prepared in advance. I have no longer any idea. I used to have an idea, because I used to keep track of it, of how many calls I would get from a banker or discussions I'd have with a banker when I ran into him on the street. And he would say, "You're not going to believe it, but Joe Jones came in this morning." This is Friday morning. "Came in this morning and he can't make payroll and he wants a loan."
Wow.
And he says, They would uniformly say, "We're not in the habit of making loans to people that didn't know until this morning that they needed one."
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Oh, wow.
So how do you anticipate that? And we provide some basic tools. Then what happens as you start to move out of the trap is we start to make those tools a little more sophisticated.
Sure.
We start to put some goal setting into those tools. We have a couple of tools that, frankly, I think are knockouts, and perhaps I should think that since I created them. But
yeah.
But you know, I didn't so much create them as I built them in response to the needs of my clients over the years. And I thought, how can I help a client avoid these problems or anticipate these problems and deal with them? And that's what George and I have done. We've taken those tools and we've simplified them, and by simplified I mean we've taken them from a tool that I would just be a bare bones, because I knew what to do with it and I knew how to use it, and so I didn't need it to have a lot of explanation and be fancy, and put them together in a format, in a way that allows a business owner or their advisor, many of our clients, you know, use their advisor, their bookkeeper, or an outside advisor to help them with this. And these tools allow you to set a goal and then to take action to accomplish that goal, and then to be able to review how you did. Did you do well? Did you really hit it out of the park on that goal? Fine. How did that happen? What did you do so we can do more of it?
Yeah.
And if it didn't work so well, if it was a bust, we want to look at it because we want to know why. What do we need to change? What do we need to do different? Let's make those adjustments. Let's set a new goal based on the adjustments, and let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Hmm. You know, that cycle that I just described of setting goals, making plans, comparing actual results against the projections, and then doing more of what worked and changing what didn't work, that's called business management.
Yeah.
That's what IBM does.
Yeah.
Now, they probably don't describe it quite that way, but it's exactly what they do.
Hmm.
Now, none of us, well, I say this, I don't want to be IBM. I don't want to, not only do I not want to run a business like that, I couldn't. I don't have those qualities and qualifications. But if there are things they're doing that I can adapt at my level, then I want to know about them. And that's what I find business owners. They want to know how they can use these tools to make their life better, their businesses better, and their finances better.
Hmm. I know there's each stage that these are actual real stages that Dan Bowser works with clients on that we're talking about. So we're just kind of getting a general overview of these stages, but you can dive deeper on these stages by going to smartbusinessmoneyhabits.com. We've covered the first and second stage. Let's go ahead and go to the third and fourth stage. There's this escaping from the entrepreneurial trap, and then there's accelerating your growth, stage three. What does that mean?
Once the owner has passed through the basic stage and they've escaped the entrepreneurial trap, then what we're talking about is a refinement. See, and I'll use this term again and again, a refinement of the prior stage. But it's a little more than that, because now we're saying to the business owner, what is it that you want to do with your business? How large a business do you want to build in whatever way you describe that? You might describe it in sales or profits or number of employees or geographic expansion or things you do that make you feel good in terms of serving your clientele. But however you describe that, now we're going to get a little bit more sophisticated than we were before. We're going to use a few more complex tools. We're going to start comparing ourselves, our businesses, with our prior self. In other words, what we call trend analysis. How did I do this year compared to last year compared to the year before? Am I trending up? Am I trending down? Or am I zigzagging all over the place? And if you asked most business owners which of those was worse, I think most people would get it and say, well, probably trending down. But actually, that's not true in most cases. It's the zigzag that's the worst.
Right.
Because you have no ability to anticipate and plan for what's going to happen next, because you don't have any understanding of, and typically, of why it's zigzagging and moving up and down. And that's where the value is lowest, because no purchaser of a business wants to buy a business they don't have some degree of confidence in what's going to happen tomorrow.
Hmm. Absolutely.
And then you can compare your business against other businesses of similar types and size. And if you're getting really good, you don't compare against the average business in your industry. You compare yourself against the upper quartile, the 25% most profitable.
Yeah.
What are they doing? What financially are they doing, and how do they look financially, and where do you measure up and perhaps not quite stack up, and what can you do to be more like them? Hmm. Now you're starting to document systems and operations. You want to be able to take a month off and not have to call in every day. At least I would hope that might be a goal. You know, as opposed to saying, well, even when I take 2 days off, I have to call in three times, you know.
Yeah.
That's not much of a life, really.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, in that third stage, help an owner figure out what it is they really want to do. They want to be involved in their business, but what are the other things they want to do, and how dynamic do they want to grow that business?
Hmm. So there's the accelerating your growth and the final stage, the fourth stage, glide onward and upward. What does that mean?
Well, that means it's now time to think about a business exit. And that means, and now that doesn't have to mean that, well, I decided today I'm going to exit my business and now I need to get it sold next week. But what that means is that value building is now uppermost in the owner's mind.
Yeah.
How do I make the business more valuable today than it was yesterday? And how will I make it more valuable tomorrow than I did than it is today? My experience has been that if owners will work on value building, we will find that their business at exit will be anywhere from 50 to 75% more valuable than it is today on average. Some are multiples more valuable.
Yeah.
But you can substantially increase value if you're thinking about it and if you're planning to increase it. There's a number of ways to leave a business, and this sometimes is what an owner needs to think about. You can plan your exit. The plan can be bankruptcy. I don't recommend it.
No.
Next up that scale is liquidation. A business isn't bankrupt. It's operating all right, but it doesn't have any value to a purchaser. That the value of the assets is greater actually than what someone will pay them for the business, and so they liquidate it. Yeah. And I've had to tell a few business owners over the year that their businesses were more valuable dead than alive. And that's not a fun message to deliver, nor is it a fun message to hear. Now let's think a little bit more positively. That owner who is at stage one or stage two can sell their business. They can sell it to another business owner who, essence, is looking to get away from the corporate world. They want to buy a job. I don't mean that in a disparaging way at all. They can sell or pass their business to a family member or to an employee. They can have an IPO. They can go public into the stock market. And I will tell you that I've talked with a number of business owners that thought that was their dream. I've never seen one pull it off. It just is not a very practical exit plan for most businesses. Mm-hmm. You can sell your business to a financial buyer or a synergistic buyer. Now, what do I mean by those two terms? A financial buyer is one who says, I'd like to buy your business. It's a nice business, and I will pay a price that allows me to earn a market rate of return on my investment. 15%, 20%, 25% or 30%, whatever it might be for that particular business and that particular size. A synergistic buyer is one who says, if I buy your business and combine it with mine, I will gain benefits that I don't have currently and can't readily produce. Yeah. Synergistic meaning 2 + 2 = 5. Mm-hmm. Now, you might be a synergistic buyer because you have a market they're not serving, or you have employees, salespeople, production people, whatever it might be, that are very valuable and could help them. You are in a geographic market that they're not. You have products or tools, or you have created systems that have great value. That's where the greatest value is created. I went up those ways to exit on purpose, and because each one is more valuable than the one before. Hmm. With the exception of the IPO, I mentioned it early on because I don't see it as practical for most people.
Fascinating. Now, going back to a stage, stage three.
All right.
We talked about business acquisition mindset a while back. I mentioned the concept of selling your business early to kind of get that idea in mind. One thing that I've thought about, and I know that all business owners have, if not in the forefront, actively doing it, it's definitely in the back of their mind, is I think you mentioned synergistic business buying.
Yes. Yes.
And I'm curious, on accelerating your growth, is that usually the point where you would think about building your business, accelerating your growth by becoming a synergistic business buyer?
That's very astute, Keith, because I hadn't brought that up, and you saw right to it. Yes, it is. You can start a business from scratch, and many people have, and now you're in that stage three, and you say, okay, I'd like to open another office, another shop, another store, move into another town, whatever the case might be. And you can do that from scratch, or you can buy a business in that area or in that market and enter that way. The beauty of buying the business and gaining synergism is that you've got a pretty good idea what you're getting into. When you start from scratch, you hopefully have evaluated it well, but you never but you never know.
Right.
When you're looking at buying an existing business, you've got a really good idea of how they're doing, and you've probably got a pretty good idea, if you've done your homework well, of what they're doing right and what they're doing not so right, and know what you might do to change that. So absolutely, growth through acquisition is a very, very sound way to scale.
One of the things I wanted to point out, which just the value to listeners of a guy like Dan, and that I've been thinking a lot about, as I think our business is still in stage two. We're thinking about stage three, but you know, we're not quite there yet. But one of the things I think about is consistently, as a marketing agency, we run into businesses that have very similar problems. I was just talking with the client I mentioned who's acquiring other companies. Well, each company that he's acquiring to build his business, synergistic move on his part, service-based company, is the low-hanging fruit is that the business owners who he's acquiring from do not know their metrics. They don't know the foundation of, you know, step one and two there. And so where he's coming from is he's already got a team. He understands the metrics. He's done his homework. And he's able to, you know, make this move to bring out the low-hanging fruit that business actually could be doing. And what's becoming more clear to me over time is that there's – buying businesses kind of seems like, oh, that – you know, that's a little bit nebulous, and you know, maybe I could do that someday. But it's coming more and more real as I realize it's actually pretty consistent problems on most businesses, and it usually comes down to those metrics and the financials, like you're saying, Dan.
I worked with a heating, ventilating, and air conditioning firm a couple of years back, and they grow through acquisition, and. Hmm. And what they did is they looked for businesses that had a good reputation in the area, but didn't have – I like the way you said it. They didn't have metrics in place. They didn't have financial controls of significance and that they should have for their size. And this company would come in, and they did what they called bolt on. They'd bolt their systems on to that business. They'd bolt their measurements. They'd bolt their financial operation. They'd bolt their metrics onto it. And they would take those businesses, and Keith, it was amazing to watch it. Those businesses would double in profitability in a year.
That's incredible. You know, I think, you know, one of the things out there that's just so common to think about is, oh, you know, should I invest in property? Should I invest in land? And one of the things that's been a big change to me in my thinking is, well, what about the property of a business? Because you already understand if you've gotten past step one and two, and you it's just like you say, you can literally like bolt on to another business. This is I haven't gone through this, but you know, I'm saying this is what it sounds like. And from your example, you can literally bolt on these things, and you know, you try to make money off of a rental home in comparison to buying a business and being able to, as you say, double profits or triple profits. That's amazing. That's incredible control.
It absolutely works, but it requires the owner to really understand their business and to have those systems and processes and procedures in place. They really, using our Smart Business Money Habits approach, they really need to be in that third stage to pull it off well. They can begin to pull it off in stage two. They absolutely can, but they need to be a little bit careful, because by our definition of stage two means they don't have full systems and processes and procedures in place.
Sure.
That's the key. You want to, how am I going to bolt it on? What tools am I going to use? And how do I do that? But boy, yeah. it's powerful. And think what they did, Keith. The the owner bought that business, the mechanical contractor I used specifically, he bought it at 1x. And when he doubled the profit, he didn't have a value of 2x. Yeah. He had a value of 3 or 4x because the more profitable the business is, the higher the multiples you get for it.
Yeah. Boy, that's a great point. Yep. I love it. I love it. And, you know, one of the things I keep on going back to is, why is it hard to make money? It shouldn't be hard. It's what you leverage, right?
Yep, that's right.
It's what you leverage in that knowledge. You guys, you know, one of the things George was talking about when you're creating the value of your business, I think, you know, just from talking with you guys, it's just fascinating to me how much value you guys can bring to businesses. I just want to point out your website again, smartbusinessmoneyhabits.com. Dan, it's been great talking to you today. I wish we had more time, and I'm sure we're going to have you or George on the show in the future. You know, listeners out there, go ahead and visit the website. Check this guy's website out and download some of their stuff, read through their stuff, you know, get in contact with them with your questions as well. And I'm sure they, Dan, you know, you have an email on your website. People can get in contact with you there.
Yeah, they surely can.
Personally.
And,
okay.
And we encourage them to have their advisors contact us if that's the way they're more comfortable. But Keith, the last thing I'd say is we have a challenge on the site, which in effect covers all these steps. It gives the owner ability to look at these steps, say, how am I doing? Am I doing this one well? Am I not doing it? Am I maybe doing it? And maybe gives them an idea of where they stand in each of those stages.
Wonderful. So that's smartbusinessmoneyhabits.com/challenge. You can go there and take the challenge for yourself. One thing I was thinking about was it's kind of like a personality test for where you're at with your business.
I never thought of it that way.
I was going to ask if you had something like that because, you know, we've taken personality tests for ourselves here just to communicate better with each other. And I was thinking, boy, how nice would it be to take a personality test to know exactly where you're at with your business? So, yeah, go take the challenge. I'm going to take the challenge, and this is really great stuff. Dan, once again, it's great to have you on the show. If you haven't listened to any past episodes, be sure to check those out at cloudtalkradio.com. And you can tune in each week at 10 o'clock a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on Tuesday. This is Keith Enix, hoping you had a wonderful week. And make sure and keep your business growing and your tools in cloud. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Thanks so much for listening to Cloud Talk Radio with your hosts, Robert J. Chandler and Keith Enix. Want to listen to past shows and stay up to date on new ones? Check them out online, cloudtalkradio.com. We'll see you next time.